Hey, Adam.
You're recording things? How are them levels, baby?
The levels are fine. I wouldn't worry about those levels.
How's the stress level after the big move to the old slippery state of KY?
things are okay now.
Yeah.
It's been a little tricky trying to get the move down here and get our house sold and all that different stuff.
You did just close on the house, right?
Yeah, that was yesterday. So it's weird when you sell a house through a relocation, you may or may not get your money right away. And so we sold it yesterday. We'll have money tomorrow, which will be cool.
Okay.
I like having money. I wish I had more of it.
Yeah. I don't really care about money anymore. But I guess that's privilege of somebody who has just enough where he doesn't have to worry about money.
Yeah.
Not enough to buy anything extravagant, but just enough where the bills are paid and he doesn't give a fuck.
Enough to buy a 22-year-old RV.
Is mine 20? Mine's 30 years old.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Which I'm driving right now. If people are hearing like squeaks and bangs, it's because I'm cruising through Iowa on the way to Colorado for Alpine Horizon Festival.
So I am not in attendance. I'm not traveling to PPIR this year. This year is a first of several like misses for me. I missed Honda Meet 21, which is a real disappointment. It's the first year in 5 years that I haven't gone.
Really?
Yeah.
That many, huh?
Yeah. And I'm not going to PPIR, which is also a disappointment. But
you've been both years, right?
Yep, I have been. Okay. Yep. We took Sloan out last year.
She was a fresh baby, too.
Like 8 weeks old at the time. Yeah, she was a trooper.
Hmm. That's freaking tiny.
Yeah,
man, that's some high. I just stopped at a Come and Go, which is what a terrible name for a place.
Yeah,
but man, they make hot coffee. Holy smokes, just burn my lower lip. Good gas prices over here compared to Illinois too, which is nice.
Yeah.
So we should probably you were saying before we recorded that we should probably preface that this might be RV heavy.
It's going to be really RV heavy.
Although I'm also going to talk about my stupid race car, the event that Abe missed, this event. What else am I going to talk about? I mean, goals for me to talk about.
Okay.
And my dog, and the tree fort that I built. Just a trying time, a lot of good, a lot of bad later.
Yeah, man. It's, this
wait,
is
Abe,
the first time.
Real quick, Abe, who's this show brought to you by and who's it supported by?
Well, it's brought to you by, Apex Pro, they're doing a lot of podcasts right now, or not podcasts, webinars right now talking about the effectiveness of coasting and how using coasting to make you go faster.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And also by FCP Euro, where every part you buy is guaranteed for life.
I'm going to see a lot of those guys this weekend over at FCP Euro.
And
Alpine Horizon.
Also supported by the patrons. We love everybody who supports the show. And
incredibly generous.
Yeah, it's awesome, and we're so grateful. And I'm gonna print some more T-shirts for everybody, and everyone's gonna have a slip angle shirt. It's gonna be awesome.
I'm gonna try to get some semi-famous automotive people on the podcast this weekend. Hopefully drunk, and if we get drunk ones, I'll put them up on Patreon. So
that'll be exciting.
There's help, dude. All of automotive YouTube is coming to this event. You notice?
That again.
I'm pretty stressed about it. Pretty stressed about it.
So who else coming?
We've got Crispy Media doing a recap video. Cletus McFarlane just said he's coming.
That's cool.
Every pro drifter in the world, Adam LZ, who's a pro drifter also, and one of the biggest YouTubers in automotive world. A bunch of dudes from Hoonigan are coming. A bunch of Valvoline people, TJ Hunt, I think. I've never watched his stuff, but I heard his name. A bunch of Valvoline supported drivers and YouTubers. It's like a lot. And so if everything goes wrong, they're going to tell everybody about it. So
they're going to blame you.
Hopefully we do everything right. I'm legit stressed about
But you're stressed before every event.
No, I'm way more stressed right now. I mean, I am stressed for every event. You definitely are correct. But, we've put more planning and operations thought into this event than we have into anything ever, though. So I think we'll be fine.
So in my absence, Charlie's been doing a ton of work getting up to speed on scrutineering and holding people accountable. He's really, really good.
Slaying it. And Carson's jumping in to help with that a lot.
And who else? Scott Malloy is helping with more data side stuff. What's exciting for me is last year during the pandemic, I did one or two events remotely because that was also right around the time that Sloan was born. And I got a lot done during the event and was able to produce a few things that take a lot of time, but are really difficult to do when you're at an event in person because you can't really like concentrate on, you know, writing an article or like doing a whole lot of heavy computer work.
And so this year you haven't been able to do some of that because we've been pulling you into the live stream too much,
which is itself exceedingly hard because at an event, especially as it relates to Time Attack, the commentary for Time Attack, because of the way our events are currently structured, is really dependent on stories and like anecdotes about who's doing what and who's struggling with what and, you know, what they're trying to accomplish.
Talking about car setup and history on the drivers. That means
that at an event, I can do exactly two things. I can be on the live stream and I can walk the paddock talking to people about what to talk about on the live stream.
Right.
So
it definitely sucks a lot of time.
So this event, I'm going to be sitting at my computer chair in my modestly sized apartment in Kentucky. Ashley is going back with Sloan to our hometown to go to the fair.
Ooh, the fair.
Yeah, Indiana. Our hometown county has a big county fair. It's one of the larger ones in the state. Really, it's just, I think, a time for Sloan to spend time with grandparents. So
that's cool.
They're going to be doing that. And maybe, just maybe, I'm going to take delivery on a coach on Saturday.
Yeah, dude, you sold your RV real fast.
Yeah, yeah. So
what did you buy?
So I sold my C-Class. For what I consider to be a sweetheart deal.
Yeah. Didn't even actually lose that much money on it.
But you
sold it really fast.
The point was to sell it fast because it was being stored in Indianapolis and I was living in Kentucky. And so I wanted confidence that if I was selling it to someone, I would drive up to where it was stored, exchange money, and drive home.
Right.
And so I sold it to a former Grid Life driver and one of my buddies from when I lived in Ohio. And I told him, you're going to get the good deal. And the reason you get the good deal is because you're a friend of mine and you have the money to buy it and you'll show up on time and there won't be any BS.
Yeah. And you wouldn't have to do any of the little fiddly maintenance stuff that you wanted to do.
Just
be done with it.
The time was like, oh, okay, if I'm going to do this, I have to get rid of it right now.
Yeah.
And I am in the middle of buying a 2004 Country Coach Allure.
Twin rear axle, 40-footer.
Yeah, it's it's a big bitch.
And how many, is it one big slide or like four little ones?
Three slides.
It's, is one of them like a full wall?
No, not quite, but they're really big.
Those full wall slides were like pretty popular around that time.
What they are is there are two slides in the front, one on each side, and there's a couch on each side, and on one side there's a kitchen, and on the other side there's a dinette. I can
already make one claim that I know is going to be true. We don't have room for that in the paddock, so you should sell it.
No way.
Sounds way too big.
I have a generator, which means I'll park it wherever the hell I want.
Yeah, you can have a big old fatty boy diesel generators.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited about that. That was one of the challenges with my last setup is we tried to be plugged in as often as we could, which meant that I almost never used the generator. And because of that, the generator almost never worked.
Right. You change the carb and little things on it. My uncle never used it either. The generator had like 50 hours on
it. Yeah, it was not much. And so this new one, it's going to be, one, it's diesel, but I'm also going to make an effort to use it more consistently, because if you don't, that's when things start to, you know, run afoul.
I literally have mine on almost the entire time my bus runs, all the time. So far so good.
So
the one time that I ran it for 3 hours with no coolant last year.
It was Dewey who basically, in a roundabout way, made the sale, because we walked into his, we were talking with Megan and Dewey, and you know, we saw the double slides up front, how big the space was that like kid could play.
It's like a house.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, this is it. Like we got to do this. And I, for anyone listening, I think it's obvious that like race cars and RVs are not investments. And Ashley and I were talking about it today. We were like, well, we're going to buy this and we're going to pay this amount of money. Pretty close. You should just assume that you're never going to get anywhere close to this back. So like, this is just ours. Like,
yeah,
it's just a thing that we're going to have forever.
I'll bet it's pretty close to bottomed out in value. Unless you beat the absolute tar out of it, which you won't. And you found like a covered spot to park it too. Which is
Yep. So I've got a covered spot, and I have access to power. It's like 25 extra a month, and it's month to month. So, in the winter, if I want to plug it in, I can.
Right. Just to keep battery tender crap like that.
Pretty much.
Probably a good idea. Although it doesn't get nearly as cold in Kentucky as
Chicago. Dude, it's been, I know it's been hot in Chicago, but man, it is so much warmer here than Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I swear it's been 95 every day for 3 weeks.
It has been a really hot summer. It's been like 95 up here too, or north of Indy.
So another really awesome feature about this RV is that it has an AquaHot. I'm not sure if you're familiar with AquaHot, but let me explain it to you. It uses engine heat or diesel or electric, I think, to heat the water heater and also heat the floors on the tile. Which
it's so ballin', dude. It's literally crazy ballin'.
So, we're like, that's a pretty complex system. I'll want to learn about it, but, like, I mean, again, this is going to be my bus, and so like I want to know just about everything there's to know.
I bet it's actually not that complex. I bet it just takes heat. It's probably a fixed system. There's probably not a ton of moving parts, and it probably just takes engine heat, just warms everything.
Yep. Yeah. So
very cool.
Theoretically, next year this could be a bus that we travel with.
Dude, let's take that thing to Coda. Let's do a big old journey.
Dude, how sick would that be?
Remember when we took my junkie RV and it was 7 degrees out? That
well, a big difference between you and me is, one, I value preventative maintenance more than you do.
No, you don't. I just bought this thing.
No. So you are different than me, and in part it's because you have the mechanical aptitude to fix it on the fly. But
dude,
also,
I've been preventative maintaining the shit out of this.
But like,
I just really bought a shitty bus.
Well, no, but like when you travel, I mean, the air brake issue that we had on the way to Coda would have been debilitating for me. I mean, that would have been a really big struggle.
Yeah, that was that wasn't maintenance. That was just me not knowing about air brakes.
Well, now you know. And tangentially, I know a little bit about air brakes too. So
Right.
But like, you're the kind of person that could learn on the fly and fix it and continue on. And I appreciate that, but that is not really a skill that I am, you know, skilled at.
I believe they call people like myself bad Emma. Man, that's a pretentious thing to say.
Well, I mean, the difference is that I would, you know, because I have a little more time to manage it, I would almost certainly, you know, send the bus to a, you know, a dealer or a service center and say, like, please fix everything. I don't want a problem on the road at all.
That's another thing, though. There's so many systems on those things, like, that something can always break.
Well,
like,
sure.
You can't just find the problem always, but it's old enough and it's got just enough miles on it. How many miles does this one have on it?
Mine has like 63.
Yeah. So it's been driven a bunch, and it's a high end enough RV that it's probably been pro maintained.
One thing I did learn, and I called around to try and get a rate that was competitive. One thing I did learn is that to insure a depreciated $400,000 bus is more expensive than you might expect.
Really?
Yeah. So to insure my C-Class was $25 to $35 a month, which is cheap. To do the bus, is the cheapest I could find was about $150 a month. And
I
like,
think I'm paying like $110. That seems cheap to me.
But. So like, I mean, I guess everything is relative. Like, you know, I don't have high car insurance rates anymore. I know that paying more than $100 a month is pretty common for some drivers. So like, I just need to realign my expectation.
I'd have to check. Maybe mine is 50 or 60. I don't remember. But my bus was only 150 brand new and way older. So we're just talking about stated value.
Yeah. So like mine will be insured, I think, for around like 70 or 80K. So like it makes sense the insurance rate's a little higher.
Right. Mine's insured for like, I think I've got it 15 or 20. So.
Yeah. So what else? I'm really looking forward to it. I drove a 42 footer a couple of weeks ago before we moved down here.
It's so big.
It was really big and it was really, really nice. And I wanted to buy it from the old man who was selling it. But you could tell that like both he and his wife were so in love with it that they really didn't want to sell it, but it was time, you know?
Right. Just couldn't maintain and use it anymore.
Pretty much.
It was like almost 90. Right?
Yeah, it was 86. He told me about how he was on the roof the week before and had to replace the skylight in the shower because he slipped and fell and broke it.
Oh, jeez.
And I was like, Max, you cannot be on the roof of this bus ever again.
Don't do that.
Don't.
You're like, that's like a 14-foot tall bus.
Yeah. And like that's a broken hip and then some for an old person.
One thing you do need to keep in mind with something like what you're driving is, especially in like Kentucky, I've noticed a lot of lower bridges.
Oh, sure.
Be very cognizant of exactly how tall you are.
Yeah. Normally it's marked on the, like in the driver area.
Yeah.
So,
but I've had two situations. Mine's only 12'4", I think. I've had two situations where I've had to have somebody hang out the window, like get up as high as they could and make sure it was clear. And that was just like in Chicago. Like
really?
So, yeah, just make sure you know what you are and make sure you don't go places that you can't.
So here was my logic as it came to buying the 42 footer, which I thought was in good shape.
A lot of more miles on it, though.
Yeah, it was like 120.
Which isn't that much for a semi truck, basically.
Basically, yeah. So the systems on it that were known to be in need of repair was the self-leveling system. And that in particular concerned me because the bus has a drive height and a set height, you know?
Right.
And if the leveling system's not working, it's unclear, you know, if all of those systems are going to continue to function. So it was like, okay, well, I'm going to buy this thing and I'm going to have someone work on repairing this because I want those two different ride heights to work because I don't want to be driving the bus bottomed out.
Well, I don't think it bottoms out, but yeah, you don't want to be too low. It's probably super, super heavy duty like air suspension stuff, but just multiple settings, a ton of valves, a ton of stuff that could stick.
Yeah. So, I ended up negotiating. I'm buying the bus from Camping World, and the reason I'm doing that is because they took in a bus on consignment, and in that way, I get to negotiate with them on things to fix and, you know, whatever. And part of that was like basically paying $1,800 for a prep fee where they evaluate and repair every major system on the bus.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, that's worth it to me.
Yeah, I could see that.
So
you don't want to work on it. You want to buy something you don't have to worry about.
Well, at the moment, yeah, because I don't even have the place to work on it. Like,
has Ashley seen it yet?
Like, yeah. What was interesting, and I guess if you're shopping for buses, it's important to know this. I drove the 42 footer, and I was really confident that that was something that we should probably pick up. And there was this listing. There was a country coach in Indianapolis, but based on the description, I didn't think that it would fit the things we were looking for. But we decided to stop in anyway, just to see what it was and what condition it was in, just to like compare. Because the 42 footer was well cared for, but it was full time lived in for about a decade, and so things were more worn.
Yeah, like the cushions and the carpet and all that stuff just looked a little dirtier.
Yeah, and so we get to Camping World, and first off, like, you know, sales tactics are like incredibly assertive. I don't want to say aggressive, but like assertive. Like, if you put in your information on the online portal for something, they'll call you constantly.
Oh, really?
They're like, hey, when you want to come in and check this bus out, you know, like, oh, you know, do you need any more details? Whatever. Yep. It's fine, because it's going to work out for us. But
they got to sponsor NASCAR, dude. They got to make them money, honey.
Basically. So we roll up and we check out this coach, and every single thing of consequence on the description is wrong.
Really?
So it is a 40-foot bus. It's the wrong trim, and the number of slides is wrong. And so, like, the only useful information are the pictures that were taken.
Yeah, the fact that they have it in their possession and it's for sale.
Yeah. And so, like, we got there and we were like, no, this is like perfect.
Cool.
The only thing that was needed practically was a few odds and ends like repair and new tires. And nice. 8 semi-truck tires are not cheap.
They're actually not that bad, though, are they?
Well, I mean, not really, but like, they're paying for them. So they were like dry rotted and cracked. And I was like, well, I'm not going to buy this. Like, make the seller buy tires, whatever. Yeah.
This is my last trip before I swap. Maybe I'll take it to Mid-Ohio because I'm picking up some extra wheels to put the two best that I currently have on spares. They don't have a spare. Most RVs don't have spares. But I'm putting a set of Falcon semi-truck tires on mine.
That's so
probably
cool.
Next week. So.
How much are semi-truck wheels for spares?
I'm getting them for free from Nick Starter, who's raced GLTC.
Sure. Yeah.
CM, and he commentated last year at Mid-Ohio, I think.
Uh-huh.
He bought an actual coach bus, like, that had been turned into a conversion into like an actual RV. Like, it was like a 1970s MCI or something.
Sweet.
And it came with like a ton of stuff, and then he ended up not using it and he sold the thing again. So he's just like, oh crap, I left 2 Alcoa semi-truck wheels behind my house. Do you want these, Adam?
Yes.
And I was like, heck yes, I do. Like, those are not free. But
I'm interested. Like, for semi-truck wheels, is it pretty close to like one size fits all? Or like, do you have to pay attention to offset and lug pattern and like everything else that you would like you would with a normal car?
Now, pretty much most, from what I can tell, I don't actually know for sure, but from what I can tell, most 22.5-inch are like, they just,
this
they
is
make
the
one,
size.
This is the wheel you get. Unless you start doing like the newer modern semis that have a single instead of dual in the rear. So then it's a super wide wheel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then like a super wide tire instead. But
so if you're listening to this and you happen to know a lot about buses, I'd be really interested to know what I need to do, like in terms of driving the bus around, when I need to lift the tag axle and when I don't, or when I just drive it and run it into the ground.
I think for your purposes, you're going to get on the highway and then you're going to get off the highway and just leave it alone.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's going to be really, really cool.
If you're going camping, like in the actual state parks and stuff, you know, you're probably going to want to lift it up so that you can wiggle around a little better and not scrub a bunch of dirt all over the place.
Oh yeah.
That's probably what I would imagine. And then like parking it in your, and I'm imagining the storage place probably has a little bit tighter quarters.
Yeah. I guess it's both convenient and inconvenient that I am the last stall in a, I mean, it's a barn that has 3 sides basically. Yeah. And I'm the last stall, which means I'll certainly have to back in, just so that I can actually cut it properly. But it'll probably take a little bit of doing just to learn how to do it correctly.
You might want to look into, I think I talked to you about this the other day. I'm planning on doing like a 3 or 4 screen or just one big, huge tablet with like 3 or 4 cameras. So I don't have any blind spots along the side of the bus.
Oh yeah.
And then like have like an upper view and like a lower view in the back.
That'd be super
maybe
useful.
Maybe like an overhead in the front too, shooting down to where I can pull in nice and tight stuff. But I don't know, like, what I know people do it, but I don't know, like, what systems are out there.
So, yeah. Well, the first
people
thing
make I'm, them, they like make them themselves.
The first thing I'm going to do when I pick it up, there are some people, and I told him that I wouldn't advertise this service, so I'm not advertising this service. There are some people down here in Kentucky who are going to help me fit probably some Ford Transit van seats inside the coach.
Oh, really?
Specifically because we want to be able to reliably and safely mount a car seat.
Those people know anything about successful formulas?
I can't speak to any of that.
like winning ones, maybe?
So they said, well, we don't work on RVs, but we might work on a singular RV.
Well, it's not an RV. It's a fabrication project.
Basically, yeah.
Is there no good belted areas right now?
Well, I think there are probably some belts, but they're side facing, and that is not adequate for us.
No, like breakfast nook or anything.
There is a nook, but it's like a table and chairs. It's not a a built in dinette. So what we were going to do is we were going to. The seat that would typically face forward on the dinette, we were going to remove that and just put Ford Transit seats because we don't actually use the dinettes anyway.
Do you have the Ford Transit seats?
No, they're $400 on eBay.
Oh, nice.
And the important thing about them is that the seat belt and the buckle are built into the seat.
Okay.
So, like, bolted to the floor and you're on your way.
Are you bolting through tile or anything?
No, that'll be... So here's how I've been thinking about it. You can't really put it in the center of the coach because that would block the walkway when the slides are in. So what I was thinking of doing is extending the slides and then drilling into the floor. And then from the underside, I think there's a piece of sheet metal that covers the frame of the slide, the skeleton of the slide.
Yeah.
So cut the sheet metal to give you access and then, put in a backing plate or something into that area and bolt down with grade whatever bolts from right there. And so you have something.
Grade, many grades.
Yeah.
Grades.
Probably 8.
Yeah.
And with that, you have a secure fixed structure that isn't... there's nothing like poking out that I know of. And so like, if you just tape over that hole with like Gorilla tape or something, the slide goes in and everything's sealed up and, it's pretty close to the center of the bus. And then when you slide out, you're good.
Makes sense to me.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know if that plan will work because I've only looked at the coach for like 10 minutes, but it should work.
We're crossing our fingers, man. Crossing our fingers.
So we'll see.
Well, I'm glad you're buying something that you're excited about. Hopefully you don't hate it. And if you do, maybe I'll buy it from you.
Well, I talked with Ashley about this. I was like, look, this is not going to be a thing that we buy and like it never needs maintenance and it never needs money. It's always going to need maintenance and it's always going to need money. But like, this is the thing that we do right now.
Yeah, right now. And I think like as Sloan grows up, I think you'll probably have some pretty fun camping trips.
Probably, but like I don't have any vacation time because I use it all to go to Grid Life. So I'm going to continue making my life easier to keep going to Grid Life.
And if you ever do go camping, you'll be the baller in the campground. So that's cool.
Yeah.
You'll be judged by all the plebe like me.
No, I mean, you've got that, you know, that Euro.
Well, people think like in some state parks, and these are people that just bought like a $25,000 tow behind trailer, and then they bought a brand new Ford pickup truck or Chevy pickup truck to tow it. So they have like an $80,000 rig, right? And they're like, well, class A life must be nice, huh? I'm like, dude, I got 11 grand in this thing.
And you could sell it right now for 25.
I did have an offer, but I refused because I couldn't buy anything adequate for a similar price.
Well, I mean, like practically it's a work vehicle for you, right? Like you take it to events and right now you are towing a lot, right?
I'm towing a 28-foot trailer full to the brim with festival gear.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And we also sent a 48-footer on Sunday morning.
That's so crazy. And that one's full too, right?
To the brim, dude.
Is it just like, what is it? I mean, I know it's like, you know, deck van, tiny truck.
We didn't bring the blue van. We only brought a tiny truck, the Dahatsu. And that thing is full to the brim with stuff. It's obviously it's banners, but those don't take up much space. It's we have a big gate. We have a lot of merch. Some of it's being shipped there. Probably 2-3 pallets of merch, I think, in that one. And then between the two trailers, we have 8 simulator rigs.
Oh, yeah. That's big stuff.
So that's probably a third or more of maybe half of all the actual like floor space. Not probably a third of the floor space. And like it's a couple of road cases for each with TVs and stuff like that because we're doing the full barcade simulator. And that's like partners are helping to pay for that. So it has to happen.
Right.
Pallet upon pallet of just like ops merch or ops stuff, you know, like the generators and like string and twine to lay out campsites. And
yep.
The paint guns to walk the paddock, move stuff around. What else would there be? It's like so many bins of stuff. You know, you got a ton of RV plugs. You've got it's just everything. Everything to put on a giant festival.
Like, yeah. It's so like, stuff. And I mean this in the nicest way possible. It's like Dirtbag F1.
Yeah, basically.
That's the Grid Life Festival experience. It's just like,
everything
about the glamour and like, high endedness of F1, just like turn it down all of it.
What? And the thing about F1, they probably have a bunch of, you know, they probably ship like, 20 semi-trailers or sea containers around all these events. And I'm sure all of them have bins that are like hand-labeled with markers. You know? but then they put like a nice stainless steel cover on top of everything.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like glass and stainless steel separating the paddocks instead of like paint lines.
But, yeah, basically.
But yeah, it's just event production stuff, like so many things. And then this will be the first one back with music. So there's literally a palette of stuff for like green rooms. Like everything from like, there's like a toaster, a coffee maker, all kinds of stuff for that, like hospitality things.
Got it.
That like, that's literally almost a palette of stuff. It's just like basically home goods. In my trailer, I've got a ton of like, the super lightweight lawn furniture, like the lawn couch, the lightweight couches, you know, like it's outdoor furniture, but that'll be for the barcade. But that takes up the room of like a Honda Civic.
Right.
And tents and tents and tents and pop-up tents and all the stuff to do with that.
So I do want to say that so it's been forever since you and I recorded a show together.
Probably has, hasn't it?
Like it's been a really, really long time. And I think one of the last times we talked, we were saying how cool it would be to have like old school BMX bikes for the track.
Yeah. That was probably the last show we did.
Dewey had
6 weeks ago
a Dyno Air in his garage, and I bought from him. And I changed the tubes on it and did a couple of things. And now it's like, it's pretty close to a functional bike. And that's awesome.
Nice. I'm putting work in before Mid-Ohio on my I have an S&M Next Generation Holmes BMX bike. That was my last bike before I hurt myself too many times.
So I wonder, though, like, this is a 20-inch wheel bike, and yeah. I am 5'9", and I am large for this bike. This bike that you're talking about, I mean, you're what, like 8 inches taller than me? Are you also on a 20-inch wheel bike?
And I was always the same basic size when I rode BMX. This actual bike is like the stretched version of a 20-inch. It was built for 6'4" people.
Sweet. So the wheels are still small, but the frame is appropriately sized?
And more or less. It's just like a little longer. But I was always super comfortable riding it. In college, when I was like, I was pretty heavy in college. It was like 20 pounds heavier than I am now. I could stand to lose 20 pounds right now, too. But, I took a, I rode constantly. But I like eating because that's one thing that runs in my family, and nobody runs in my family. I took a PE requirement. I took a bicycling class, and I was the only person on like a single speed and the only person on a 20-inch. And the final for the class, it was just like a 1-credit class. You know? The final was like a 40-mile ride.
And brutal.
It happened to be mostly in the rain. And I was like the third person to finish. I like crushed everybody.
That's funny.
but I rode it all on my bike, mostly standing up. You know, but
40 miles is a long way standing up. I think
it was long. I did change the seat so I could sit down more comfortably for that. But
this one is going to be kind of a no frills thing for me. And the plan for Ashley and I is to leave everything that we need for grid life, except for clothes and food.
Yeah.
Just in the bus. And
that's basically what I do.
The pass-throughs in the bus are like proper pass-throughs. They go from one side to the other, which is itself awesome. But so like, I'm just going to throw the bike underneath.
Yeah. So much room.
So I'm pretty excited about that I won't like have to do anything to pack that kind of stuff.
Do some of the bottom compartments have like the cool full slide, like where it all slides out?
Oh yeah, dude. Two of those.
Fucking hate you.
But we can both agree that if we had infinite money, we would both buy Prevost XL2s, wouldn't we?
Oh, heck yeah, man.
That's the, for the non-bus Philistines, the XL2 is that very classic stainless steel riveted exterior bus that like
so good.
You're picturing in your brain. That's what those are. And I want one so bad.
I want ones in the worst way, like the worst way.
So those are 99 times out of 100. They're made as Prevost chassis that are converted by a bus converter outfitter.
Yeah, there's a ton of them in Tennessee, I guess, near like Nashville.
I also learned that there is an outfitter in Chicago called Liberty Coach, and they do really high-end shit.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of those things, like, you don't even hear about them because they have years' worth of clients, and they build 4 buses a year.
They build stuff for wealthy people, and that's not us.
They're like $1 to $7 million buses.
Yep. So. And if you look, 30-year-old buses are still $100,000.
Oh, more. Yeah. Maybe more.
Like a 20-year-old Newell is easily $100,000.
Oh yeah,
man.
And Newell is like, they're not even like, they're like custom made stuff, but they're like the name brand custom. You're not even getting into like the bespoke stuff, even though they basically are all bespoke.
So I've been watching a lot of RV videos recently. And what I did learn is when you buy a Prevost or when Liberty Coach buys a Prevost, they basically buy the bus shell.
Yeah. And it's like the unibody.
It's got all the guts and stuff underneath. And then they fit all the interior bits and stuff inside and make it a fancy RV. Yep. When you buy a Newell, conversely, Newell is a chassis builder as well. And so you spec out your Newell, and if you buy a 42-foot Newell, they build you a 42-foot chassis.
It's not bought somewhere else.
Which I think is really neat.
And they also do like some really goofy custom stuff, because basically they're starting from a white sheet of paper every time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the bus in San Francisco that I want to buy and might someday still?
No.
So I've talked to this guy a couple of times. Have you ever heard of Canepa in San Francisco? They restore Porsches. They do everything. It's super high-end dealer. Also, they sell vintage race cars. They sell vintage cars. It's high-end stuff.
Okay.
The Monterey Historics, Bruce Canepa wins them all the time in some Porsche 935 or whatever.
Neat.
He's he's the man about town in vintage world in San Francisco. And he's for years, he's owned Canepa Design, out there. And one project that he did in 1995, I think, was for MCI, that they make regular old coach buses, right?
Yep. Yep.
But MCI had clients that wanted custom coaches, and they didn't really do that. And so none of their buses ever had a center door. It's always in the front, which is like a regular coach bus, like a pedestrian bus. And some high end buses have that too. But center door is more like an RV. So MCI made 10 center door buses, and they were extra height, and something different chassis. To be an RV. And so Bruce Canepa Design spec'd them. And the first one, they went on to build three or four of them for I think one of them was Ray Charles, famous singers. But the first and second one went to Bruce Canepa. They had the second one, it's the cool name, I'll tell you in a second. They had aerodynamic body. It was the whole front and back and side skirts were they were aero designed, and they looked really dope.
Neat.
It was built for Bruce built himself one and never ended up using it. So it's been in storage forever, and he's selling it. He never finished the interior, so it's raw. He's selling it brand new. But he actually built one for Roger Penske.
Neat.
So Roger Penske had one, and Bruce has an unused version without an interior, which I think would be a super fun project to build a bus. But the thing looks so cool. If you're at a computer, you can Google it. Look up Canepa, Canepa RV, or Canepa MCI, or something like that. I'm sure it's still for sale on their site. So I inquired about it a while, because it was call for price. The secretary or whoever was can I get your number and email address? I'll actually have to have a salesperson call you. And 10 minutes later, I get a call from some California number, and Bruce Canepa and I talked on the phone for an hour about this bus.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it's I want it so bad. He wants I think he wanted 80 grand for it. But I got the impression he'd probably take about 50, because he might have mentioned that.
So, that's so cool.
He wants it to go to the right buyer.
The 1991 Canepa Design prototype?
I think so, yeah. The bus? Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Sweet.
Wasn't it 91? I thought it was 95. I don't know.
It's a Detroit 8 V92.
Yep.
It's got 8,000 miles. Which is
kind of an old school diesel. Yeah, it literally only has the miles from driving to some shows and driving across the country to bring it to San Francisco. So, they just went through it all, did all maintenance and stuff, but the diesel engine also is worked over by, to make I think it was 500 horsepower, he said, which isn't that crazy for diesels, but it's worked over by somebody at Penske themselves. Penske did the engines for them.
Dude, this is right up your alley. There is nothing on the inside.
How dope is that, right? It's deep, old school.
It's got 80s vibes. It's got...
right. It's old school, 80s Outrun style vibes on the outside too, right?
It's got like wheel covers. I don't know what the right term is, but like
that would be like an aero cover or some Hot Rod World calls them moon discs because moon racing components sold them for a long.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's literally just like a flat floor inside, like with plumb. It's got like the tanks and stuff, but nothing else.
And it's got massive pass throughs.
So it's a full coach bus. So if by chance I ever make any money and that's still available, I'm buying it.
I would just buy it and plan on making money later.
I've looked into financing on it. It's tough because it's never been completed. And there might be a problem because it was never titled. So like I might have to pay an absolutely insane amount of tax on it. If I bought it, because like, it's probably valued brand new, like $500,000.
It's a 1991.
Yeah, my shitty bus was $155,000 in
91. Man.
So it was probably a quarter or half $1 million in 91. So like, who knows what the tax implications would be?
I think I do know, or at least I did know while I was in Chicago. If you bought a car that was beyond a certain age, you paid a flat tax, which at the time was really cool.
Michigan used to have something like that too.
Yeah,
there'd be if I ever did it, I'd have to. I mean, I'm sure there's a reason nobody's bought it. It's probably too much work for most people that have the ambition to do something like that, and too much money for the people that actually could do it. You know what I mean?
You got to buy this bus, man.
It's pretty rad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
But yeah, I'd have to look into it a bunch more. But.
It's probably 3/4 glass with just a few walls, like at eye height.
Right. Backup
camera, I can see. You could clean up the inside pretty quickly, and it would be solid.
Dude, and I've got like this idea for how I would want to lay it out. It doesn't have any slides or anything. It's just basically like a bigger version of mine. And I've always felt like mine has plenty of room in it for me and Emma and Sarah, or like me and dudes that are going to the racetrack. But it's like 4 feet longer or 5 feet longer than mine. So it'd be big, but I'd want to put the bedroom in the back probably. But I'd want to use a lot of glass and a lot of stainless steel inside and keep like the walls, like opaque glass.
That'd be kind of cool.
And I could do that cause I own a glass company also, but, and it wouldn't even be that. It'd probably be cheaper than 2x4s nowadays.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So that bus sent me down a wormhole for so many days.
Man, I'm right down there with you. Like,
isn't it cool?
You should
though?
Buy that.
Well, maybe a little someday. Got 10 more days before I pay off the building, my work building. So.
Yeah. What are you gonna do with all that money? You better be buying a bus.
Hopefully, just work less.
No. You're like a shark, man. If you stop moving, you're going to die.
That's fine. I'm over it, dude. the sweet release will be next.
Well, that's exciting.
That might be a thing someday.
Yeah, you gotta do this.
You want to talk about race cars and Hanami for a minute?
For a minute, yeah.
I did a few shows there. I think you just put out the one with Chris.
Well, wait, hold on. We did 48 minutes. Do you want to just cut it here and do another show?
All right, sure.
All right, give me a second.
Man, these bridges are still bumpy.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabe, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough, and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes, and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.